All right, everybody, good morning. It is 10 a.m. on April 17th, 2020. And I hereby call to order the meeting with Storrs County Board of Supervisors. We're originating a conference call from the administration building. And I would ask for, and there's information on the agenda regarding the phone number to call and a text number. So I would entertain a motion for adoption of the agenda.
So moved. This is Lisa.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second by Laura Solson. Heddon?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Agenda is adopted. And now I'm going to ask who is on the phone. Lisa Heddon and Laura Solson obviously are. In the public meeting room, we have myself, Ethan Anderson, Lucy Martin, Joby Brogdon, Barb Steinbach, and Shelley Boyle. And is there anybody else who's on the phone?
Tammy Gardner.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi.
Leanne Carter.
Okay, I got Noel.
Leanne King.
Sandra King.
Sue McCaskey.
Sue McCaskey.
Brett McLean.
Brett McLean. Anybody else? Jerry Moore. Alyssa Wignall. Anybody else?
Leanne Carter.
Leanne Carter.
Yep.
Anybody else? Okay. Thank you, everybody. Next on the agenda is a statement explaining why the meeting in person is impossible and practical for closed session 21.8.1, and that's because of the continuing pandemic, COVID-19, and needing to maintain social distancing and also have no more than 10 people in a gathering. And that's per in a statement made pursuant to code section 21.8.1. Five, the statement of necessity of meeting to be held on less than 24 hours notice for closed session. This meeting was noticed more than 24 hours ahead of time, so that's not necessary. Next, we have updates on COVID-19. Are there any staff updates that it would be important to hear right now? Hearing none, are there any updates from the supervisors of importance right now?
I don't have an update, but I do have a question for legal counsel.
Is that regarding another agenda item or in general?
I think it's in general.
Okay, why don't you ask the question then?
Okay, so my question is related to what takes precedence over which does the HOOPA enactment take precedence over normal operations when it comes to elected officials or approving changes in operation plans?
What do you mean by changes in operation plans?
You have to go
up
there,
of course. Well, so the changes in operation plan would be that the suspension of a service. Whereas, and so elected officials, is my understanding, have a policy control over their various areas, over their, the people that they supervise, the departments that they supervise, or offices they just supervise, to make the decisions. In fact, they have to make the decisions about the addition and the suspension and deletion of services. So my question is, in us activating the COG plan, did we supersede that?
So my, this is a question of authority, and this is also a question. I'm unclear. I don't want to give a vague answer. It depends on the specific factual circumstances of any particular question. But generally, elected officials do have broad autonomy for how they run their offices. that they, I would expect, like Ted has been doing, he consults with the board before he does things. But again, I believe elected officials have cooperated with KUCOG and are implementing KUCOG in their offices.
So my question has to do with the elected officials. Okay, then maybe let's shift off of the KUCOG here and go to normal business operations. That elected officials make the decisions on policy changes, of which addition and subtraction, deletion of services or suspensions of services are a policy issue, correct? And each elected official keeps those decision-making at their level, or in the case of the Board of Supervisors, at their level as collectively making that decision, correct? Because that's why bringing the KUCOG is, did the KUCOG all of a sudden do away with the hierarchy and who actually gets to make decisions regarding the offering of services?
Okay. Generally speaking, no, it doesn't. The Board of Supervisors still has control over department heads and the people they appoint. But as far as individual policies, the guideline then comes down to the essential functions and the services that are set out in the KUCOG.
But I think more in general, before any of us go any further on that issue, I think it's just clear to make it very clear about who has authority to make decisions on the services being offered. And I ask, I really include KUCOG, because did that throw that out the window? That's what I'm really asking here. Did, when we adopt the KUCOG, did we all of a sudden throw out the authority of any, and I'm asking for all elected officials, you know, most still have the issue of needing to have 2 out of 3 vote on something. But I really am asking seriously about did the KUCOG shove aside the elected officials or the board supervisor's ability and actually having the authority to make a decision about what services are offered.
More discipline.
That's what I'm asking.
Could I offer something just as a thought?
Yes.
The supervisors approved the KUCOG. In my mind, when the supervisors did that, they did pre-approval of some decisions that would be as guidelines in the event of an emergency. One of those is essential functions, because my understanding of planning for emergencies is you want to do as much pre-planning as you can. I think the Board of Supervisors, in approving the KUCOG, did approve the decisions that people are making that are consistent with the KUCOG.
Thank you for that, Linda. See, that's why when there were suggestions about what, in fact, should the essential functions be, and then there was a decision about moving forward that there was going to be no altering of the KUCOG until after this event was over. I did not feel that same way. I did not feel that in my vote approving activation of the KUCOG plan that I gave away my vote to look at significant changes in operations. So thank you. So we have a disagreement, okay, a difference in understanding about what we even voted on with the KUCOG. And hence, Ethan, that's my question to you. Which one supersedes? Did we throw out our ability to still make decisions on operations? You know, and that, there's your issue right there.
Well, I still think that the Board of Supervisors acting as an entity within Iowa Code 331 has the authority to direct its direct reports to do different things. I would think that authority hasn't been ceded away. If the board, as a you, Lisa, and Linda, decide you want a department head to do X, Y, or Z, and if you're consulting the CCMT and thinking about, or the CUCOG, and thinking about how that impacts the central functions of providing county services, then give that direction. But the direction has to come from the board as a group.
Correct. Okay, I'm with you on that, Ethan. So we already know that the board had a disagreement because it was brought up in a CCMT meeting. We, as a group, need to give direction to that staff. The staff cannot take it on its own, correct, before consulting with the board as a whole.
I don't know if I agree with that statement. There's an element of trust that you place in your employee to do the job that has been assigned to them and delegated to them. And if they're making decisions within their own autonomy in those jobs, unless you disagree with what they're doing, that's when you can direct them. But it's not a situation.
Okay.
We're not back to micromanaging employees on every individual decision they have to make. If they're exercising...
But if they make a decision... Okay. All right. So I just want to be sure here, because I'm pretty clear about the fast forward and what the feedback was to staff. Okay? So I'm just asking you legally, you know, where are we sitting here about this? Okay? So the fact that staff, one board member at the board table gave direction to staff, and the other two supervisors did not contradict that by saying we don't support the direction, which was the direction was to basically consider some, look at some alternatives, okay? So that's what I'm really trying to figure out here about. I understand the board as a whole, but we're back to this consensus thing, right? That I'm probably operating on, if you don't say something at the board table, then the assumption is there's a consensus.
I would think that if we don't, as the board, vote to direct staff, that then only one supervisor is stating an opinion.
Okay. All right. So from our discussion today, there's going to be a lot more votes actually need to be votes at the table, and there needs to be much more clarity to staff about expectations and requests. Okay. Thank you for the attorney having this discussion this morning. I appreciate it, so that everyone knows where their authority lies in the future.
Is there anything else under item 7? Okay. Then we'll go on to discussion and consideration of items brought before the board with requests for immediate action. The agenda item here is discussion and consideration of animal adoptions during the COVID-19 pandemic. And we have Sandra King and Sue McCaskey on the phone. Would you, Sandra and Sue, would you please inform us on this issue?
Yes, good morning, board.
Good morning.
The issue was brought before you today in response to Supervisor Olson's request to have it brought forward. It is actually not a suspension of adoption or change in policy. It's a change in the procedures to carry out the adoption policy. Currently, as we all live under the cloud of COVID-19 and are guided by the advice of health professionals, I think we see that there's some disagreement on what, you know, exactly how the virus is transmitted. Earlier, we were told it was just person to person. Now, we find later that some animals can catch it. So there is some concern among the animal control staff that they may be able to catch it, cats, for example. And I think that's where a lot of the concern and anxiety is coming from. Also, the board took action to have closed county buildings to the public. The animal control staff still do a lot of those normal operations, so they still have contact with the public, and when members of the public come into the building to pick up their pet, they have not always zeroed in on an exact animal and is just coming in to pick that animal up. They may still want to look at three or four or however many they choose to, because we have heard that the virus can live on different surfaces, including clothing. Staff is concerned that they may be able to catch that from interacting with members of the public. And so they want a change in procedure to eliminate that final step or defer that final step for now until county buildings are reopened.
So, Sandra, this is Loris, okay? So, you're pointing at a change in procedure. So, but your change in procedure is to just not allow animal adoption. Am I correct, or have I mischaracterized that?
That's not correct.
Okay, thank you. Please go more into this.
They still accept applications. They still have contact by phone with the prospective person who wants to adopt an animal. They just want to defer that final step. Everything else is still occurring. So the adoption
process. Could you please explain the final step?
Just picking up the animal, that is what we see as the final step, to pick up.
Okay. Did you call to the AIMS Animal Shelter or the Animal Animal Rescue League of Iowa to determine how they're facilitating adoptions that actually result in someone being able to take a pet home?
I didn't personally do that, but Sue has been in contact with them.
Okay. So, Sue, I talked to both yesterday. I talked to Ron Edwards over at the Ames Animal Shelter, and I talked to the Animal Rescue League, okay? And they both seemed to have very clear, very clear procedures that carried it all the way through to the animal being able to be picked up. So I want to back up in our procedures a little bit. About the fact that are you denying someone who wants to adopt a specific animal they've identified on Facebook or, you know, or they saw before the 30th or whatever, so they zeroed in on an animal or one of their couple, are you denying them the introductory meet also?
So at this point, what we've been trying to do is, and we are still, as Sandra said, we're still taking applications, we're still processing applications. We still are doing all the other animal control services. So at this point, and this was just as of last Friday, we had been doing adoptions by appointment.
Yes.
We were trying not to cross-contaminate with people overlapping in the shelter, and we wanted to make sure that we had staff that, you know, we could, I don't like to say watch people, but we're in a pandemic, so I guess that's what you'd say, and make sure that we were providing what they needed, but also that we were following our rules for correct sanitizing. And so I guess from my standpoint, this came about, I know that the Ames, I also talked to Ron yesterday, the Ames Animal Shelter takes in, well, I should say they get a lot more animals claimed than we do being in a city shelter. So they never have the cats that we have coming in from the rural areas and the contract counties. That being said, I think that we're not denying, the people now that we've been taking applications from, we've been emailing applications, we've been doing them by phone if needed, we're sending them to them, we're telling them to return this to us so we can get a process. It's not a matter of this is of something that we wanted in place forever. We were thinking that because of COVID and the lack of knowledge or the knowledge that seems to be changing with it, that we had staff that was very concerned about people coming in. I'm looking at this from, I'll go the next step. I'm looking at this from a step of, so our job is indeed to adopt animals out, find good homes for animals. And we do. But when you have somebody that looks at a cat online, for instance, and says, well, you know, okay, I want this cat, her name is Luna. And we put on there, Luna doesn't like other cats, but Luna likes people. But when we take the cat into the adoption room, and this happened last week with the appointment, they're like, I don't want this cat, I want to look at more. So what we've tried to mitigate, or what I thought we were mitigating, was just the next couple weeks during the peak, continuing to take applications, continuing to approve them, but not having people coming and going out of the shelter.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you a couple of things. Starting with you made a decision on your own without even consulting with Knox or finding out what other shelters in the area were doing.
Well,
right?
As much as our shelter and other shelters are alike, they're also very different. So when I talked to Ron yesterday, he said that they haven't been really good about practicing their social distancing. They're not wearing masks. They're not wearing gloves. They're not, the people that come into the shelter to adopt are not doing any of those.
Okay. Is your staff practicing wearing masks, social distancing?
Absolutely.
Okay, and you got masks. So we don't need to create masks.
We've got air masks. We've been wearing gloves. We practice social distancing. We're disinfecting and everything as we go.
Okay, so now I take this to your example that appears to have prompted this. No, we don't like it. We want to stay another cat. And you said no to them, right?
So what we did was we were going to let them see a couple cats. So I'm speaking from the experience on this, I would bring in another cat. And, you know, as it turned out, people were like, no, that's just not what I'm looking for. I feel like even though a couple of these adoptions were approved for adoption, they were good adopters, I feel like they settled for a cat, okay? I feel like they didn't get the cat that if they could come in and socialize with the cat, you know, and a lot of people do come in a couple times because they want to make sure it's a fit for their family and the pet they already have. So I feel like we're doing a disservice to not only sending animals home with people who may not have chosen the right one, and we're doing a disservice to the animals because they may get brought back, which we do not like to see. We want our animals back, but we don't like to see that. Or they might be given to somebody else or dumped somewhere. So it goes along with that, but also the fact that what I have been reading and watching is that the peak of the pandemic in Iowa was going to be happening during this time. And I have several employees concerned about this, either by age or by, you know, health conditions. And so, you know, I thought that
everybody's concerned about it here. Let me back up here because when I spoke with Shalon and the animal rescue league, their employees have the same concerns, okay? And so, animal rescue league, they are wearing masks. And but I'd like to come back to this concept about, I think you're right, that not everybody's going to be happy because Ron is very sad that they pick out one or, and if they don't like it, before they ever come in the door, they are heavily counseled or new approved. And then when they come in and if that one just doesn't seem to be the match, then they are sometimes offered a second. I know he has less inventory, so that's asking your staff to kind of know some of the animals. But then that's it. They're done. And so I'm very concerned that the staff went ahead on its own with limited finding out what everybody else was doing, and then said, no, we're just going to stop it right now, and we're not going to, you know, rather than facilitate to those people. I share your concern, and the person I think who cares about animals shares your concern that an adoption doesn't work out and the people don't bring the animal back, which is the best case, but instead do something with it. And that risk occurs whether they've met a bunch of animals or not. We know that. So I'm back to here asking if the staff in fact feels that they don't have the protective equipment. Do they feel they don't have enough disinfectant to wipe down the visitation room when somebody comes and looks at that one tab? I'm going to add my question. Do they not feel they have the ability to say to someone, we're sorry if you don't like the cat and maybe the ultimate, because of COVID, we're going to have to ask that in the doing.
Okay.
Is this a problem just about not setting boundaries?
So, no, I don't think so, because people that came in last week when we did the adoptions by appointment, we had said to them on the phone, because we're trying to be straightforward with people, that yes, you can come in and, for example, look at Luna the cat, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can see her, but they get in here, Luna's not who they want. So they can, look up, and they can look at up to three cats is what we were doing.
Okay.
We're trying to make that, you know, I mean, without having them roam through the cat room, we know that the virus they're saying lives on stainless steel, which is all the cages in our cat room are stainless steel. It can lay on that surface for 3 days. And as much as we clean and take care of the shelter, we cannot get every crack and crevice. So allowing people to come in and pet cats, and then a half hour later having somebody else come in and pet cats, that gives us great concern, because that's what was happening. We were taking, like, Luna out of the cage, and somebody was seeing her and saying, no, that's just not the one for me, and looking at another. But a half hour later, an hour later, somebody else was coming in and saying, well, I'd like to look at this cat, and it didn't work out. Well, how about Luna? Okay, so now Luna has been touched by two people. And right in the middle of this are the shelter people. And while it's known that they don't think it lives on animal fur for a long time, they are thinking it does live there for up to 2 to 4 hours.
How many people are we getting that are coming in? I mean, are we getting, wow, like I asked, are there more than two per day coming in after we're talking about the screening process, you know, that you talked to them, you've already approved it, they've looked online, that I want to see a specific. There's more than two per day coming in to adopt?
Yes.
But I've gone through the whole screening. Holy cow!
Well, you know what?
I mean, I'm excited to hear that.
You know what? Here's what this is Linda. I have an observation. There are people who are home and are bored and are doing things to get out, okay? And we've seen playgrounds closing because that's a problem. We've seen some parks closing. We've seen in order to maintain social distancing, in order to maintain safe practices, some of those things have had to close. I'm starting to think the animal shelter might not be much different than that. If you're getting more people coming in, that's probably because people are bored. Oh, great, the animal shelter let us come pet cats. Well,
I will tell you, there are people that just want to come in and just look because they don't have a lot to do.
Yeah, and
so we tell them no, right? We're closed.
Well, we are. But for an example, last Thursday, we had, I think, 5 appointments on Thursday in half-hour increments, trying to keep people separate.
Wow.
And Friday, we also had, I think we had 6. So while we were continuing to do that, we're still allowing a lot of people in the shelter, in my opinion.
Yes, okay. Weren't you have a lot of questions here, made a lot of points. Maybe other supervisors have some things they would like to say also, or ask questions of Sue or Sandra. Could I give you an opportunity?
So I have a question. So I'm looking as well as some of the other animal shelters in the state, and I do know a number of them have either limited or some are doing similar to what you're doing the increments of every half hour or even every hour of letting someone come into their to adopt, and they're waiting for it to be very specific about someone adopting an animal. I've seen a few places, and of course now I can't find because I'm not quite looking at it right now, that have, instead of even folks coming into the shelter at all, is they bring the animal out to them. Have you done that at all, or has that been a consideration? I'm just inquiring.
Oh, sure. So what we've done is we can't obviously take them outside. So what we are doing is we are bringing them from the cat room out to our dog visitation room, which sits right next to our front desk, so that we can keep an eye on it. So we're there if they have questions they want to ask, so we can watch the interaction, you know. And so, yes, we've done that. I think the problem is that seeing so many people at one time, and we thought about going to less than a half hour, but I don't feel that's fair for the person adopting or the animal that could be adopted. So, and an hour, I believe, is too long. So we agreed on the half hour. We decided that we would try it that way. So last week when we did do it, just to kind of give you a little bit more background, we had people that when their entrance to the shelter, they were told on the phone when we made the appointment, was that they had to provide their own face mask because we don't have that many. So that was fine. People did that. Only one person forgot. And we gave them one of ours. And then as they came into the front door, they were given, we have a box of gloves. They're not sterile for surgery, but they are gloves that you would use to handle animals in a situation like this. And they were told to please take, you know, a couple of those, put them on, and to go to the dog visitation room, and we would bring whatever cat they had, you know, initially come for into them. If it did not work out, they got in here and said, nope, that's not the cat for me, I want to look at others, we would provide two others. Now, there were a couple people that we had let come in to do adoption that did not like any of the cats that we were showing them. And so putting everything together that had happened, as far as we had the gloves people were wearing, cats do not like to be touched with blue rubber gloves. I'm just going to tell you that. They get all wiggy about it. And the people that were coming in and, you know, looking at the cats, the gloves were being torn. The gloves were being, you know, they just rip. I mean, they're not a high quality item. So I felt that is another exposure that we're looking at. And while we did offer them new gloves, you know, it's just, I think, a case where having even six people coming and going out of the shelter in an afternoon, because in the mornings we do clean, I felt like when you ask somebody, have you been exposed, they're going to say probably no, because they don't know that they have. But that's the problem with this virus is we don't know about it. We don't know if we have been exposed until much later for a lot of people. So that's kind of what I was going on, Lisa.
Gotcha. And so then when you also say that folks can, you know, look at two additional, so have they, like, looked on their iPhone or whatever and identified two, or how are you making the determination as two additional? You know, how are they making that decision?
Well, so like, say for instance, one gentleman came in, he wanted a black cat. It was an older cat that we had. He came in here, like I said, the gloves are making the cat somewhat, some of them, indifferent. So, he wasn't happy with that cat, so then we showed him, and he specifically did want a black cat because he realized that they're longer to stay in shelters most times. So we did bring him in another black cat, and that did not fit his personality for what he was looking for his family and for the animals that they already had. And so finally, we did get a black cat out that he was happy with. He didn't get everything he wanted because he also wanted to adopt an older cat at the same time. But he did get a black cat. So, I mean, we've tried to be as complete with people as we can, give them what they want, try to work with them. But I feel like this, you know, and another thing I wanted to bring up is we're governed, even though Ames is a government entity, as are we, the animal shelter in Ankeny, the Animal Rescue League, they're a humane society that has a board, but they're not a government entity. So a lot of things that they do down there, which would pertain to like sending animals out, euthanizing, all that stuff is much different than the other shelters. So, you know, I guess if you have any questions, I'm sorry I go from one thing to another, but I'm trying to you know, relay the information that I have to you.
Did you have more questions? Because I have a few. This is Linda.
Not at the moment. Go ahead with yours. It may facilitate me to have an additional question or two, but go ahead.
Sue, I've got some questions for you. Are you continuing to provide pasture and sheltering for all animals in our jurisdiction?
Yes.
Are you responding to bite reports or rabies-suspected issues?
Yes.
Are you dealing with aggressive animals that are actively involved in attack, killing on humans or other domestic animals?
Yes.
Are you providing medical care for critically injured or sick animals?
Yes.
Okay, those are all the essential functions for the animal control and shelter that are on Section 8, page 4 of the COOP card. I'm noticing that adoptions and volunteers and correspondence, et cetera, are in reconstitution, it looks like to me. So those are not essential functions. Is that how you recall putting the COOP card together?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you complying with and providing all of the services that our local communities have contracted with us to provide?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Is the shelter overrun with animals right now?
No, actually, we have come down in our animal population. We have lots of empty cages. And going with that same statement, we also are keeping empty cages because we don't know if this gets worse, if we might take in animals from people, or there might be a situation. So we do have empty cages. Right now we have, you know, probably 15 empty cat cages. So, I mean, yes, we do have space.
Okay. And when you've been answering questions here, it sounds to me like you're taking, in terms of deciding to delay this final step of adoption, you have looked at different alternatives. To me, it seems
And last week was one of the alternatives that I wanted to try.
Okay.
But after last week, by the time we got done, I felt that people came in, they weren't getting to look at the animals, socialize with the animals, be with the animals. And for people who are serious about pet adoption, that's a step that really needs to happen to make sure it's a successful adoption. We do not have very many animals brought back to us because we allow people that time to get to know them and make sure that it's a fit for their family.
And what you determine is you can't give them that time safely in this current environment. That's what I'm hearing you saying.
So I feel, that is how I feel about this. We have rubber gloves that will not withstand much, so the people coming in or the people that work here, either way, we're all wearing them. Now, we do not wear them when we clean. They may use the Playtex gloves, but everybody has been divided into rooms, again, for the social distancing and to make sure that, you know, we're keeping away from each other. So we're still, you know, every service that I can think of off the top of my head, we are still providing, except I just wanted to pause physically having people come into the shelter and want to look at cats, handle cats, and the reason I'm bringing up cats is because our dog population, we're waiting for spays and neuters, on a couple of them. We only have four. And the vets right now are not doing spays. They're saving that surgery material for emergencies. And some are not doing neuters. So we are kind of sitting here like everybody else is, kind of waiting to see what happens.
Okay. And you did also mention that the increase in cases, and we had five new cases in Story County in just the last day, and we don't know today's numbers yet. So, and what I've seen from the University of Washington metrics is we're about 3 weeks away as a state from hitting our maximum usage of our resources to deal with the pandemic. So I will just opine right now that I think you're very wise to be looking ahead at the next few weeks in terms of further reducing any possible transmission. So thank you, Sue.
Yes.
So this is Laura. I have a question for Linda based upon your question there. And okay. So this is, adopting an animal is not for most people an ongoing regular activity. So Linda, what do we say to those people who have decided, who are serious adopters, good animal owners, who have decided that this is the period of time when they have, while they're home, working from home or later on, to acclimate a new animal into their household? So our animals, our charges, will now have the opportunity to get examined, okay, and adopted. And instead, these people are going to other facilities, whether it be ARL. I picked the ARL because of the volume, Sue, by the way, okay? Because I understand Ron doesn't do the volume. But what do we do? I mean, we've had cats up that have been in the shelter up to 3 years. That one finally got adopted. But it's not good for cats. I mean, it's not the breeding animals, we can find that long. So Linda, what do we do if we lose adopters who would have taken one of our animals?
I'm just going to go back to what we decided as a board of supervisors when we first decided to eliminate all non-essential access to the public to our buildings. What we were saying is we need to provide services, we need to keep our staff healthy, we need to continue to provide essential services of county government. Yes, it would be too bad if some people who couldn't adopt a cat right now who otherwise might have. But that's why I went back to the Cook Clock, that's why I went back to the essential services. I'm very aware of the fact that we're not allowing visitation of the human residents of our county jail right now. We're not even allowing non-jail staff to go back to the jail for any reason or to go into the communication center. I just don't see how considering the situation that we are in, considering the fact that the next 3 weeks are going to be crucial in the state of Iowa, weighing that versus if we lose a few people, a few opportunities to adopt animals out at the risk of increased exposure to our staff, at the increased exposure from one person who comes in to another person who comes in, and having to clean everything in between those, I just think we're overburdening staff in asking them to do those kind of things. I think Sue's being very, very proactive, looking forward. She's also looking at the experience that we have had when she's trying to say, let's try to keep it going. And she's done some heroic efforts here. She's come to the conclusion, we're not able to protect people. I think we need to look at the expertise of our director of the animal shelter.
Well, I'd like to address the plastic glove, the rubber glove issue, just from the standpoint, couldn't we get cotton gloves? I mean, I hear some things, but that's the main point here. So, Linda, did they consult with you before they made this decision?
No, they did not.
Did they talk to you?
No, they
okay.
did not.
They
she
did not.
Decision,
okay.
She made a decision that's consistent with the Cook Clock that the Board of Supervisors approved.
And I did vote for that, and I'm very sorry about that vote now, because I tried to get some additional things put in there at the time.
I don't recall that.
Oh, I go back to it. I
idea. What these specifically related to animal control.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Lisa, did you have any other questions?
No, I don't have other questions at this particular time. You know, I have to say that this is also kind of a tough topic as well. And listening to all sides and just, you know, doing some research. I know that, I'm just trying to find that, excuse me, the email that I had. I had actually reached out to Molly Lee, who's on the Board of Health, but she's with the veterinary clinic or whatever. You know, she had been said that, you know, the virus was shown to replicate poorly in like dogs, pigs, chickens, and ducks. But it's apparently a susceptible species is cats and ferrets. And apparently so far the disease seems mild or whatever, but that they can contract the disease as well. And then she just provided me some additional resources on it. I guess I do have one question on it. Sue, if you are looking at potentially or seeking to potentially suspend that final step, the actual adoption portion. So they've been approved, but suspending the adoption. What time frame are you looking at?
So, a couple things. So we are looking at what we were hoping to do is kind of get through the peak. There's a couple things I wanted to add, I based my decision on many, many, many things. But one thing that also happened last week is I had a couple people call, and they had been told by the therapist that they needed to get a cat. I don't really think they even wanted a cat. They were just told that since they were home, they needed a cat. On our part, I don't think that's very responsible to be doing that. However, one person came over. They filled out the application. They seemed like they were on board, wanting to do what we said. The other one was more like, well, you know, I don't know if I can afford a cat. Well, if you can't afford one, then, you know, there's got to be something else for therapy. And I'm the first one to say, you know, I understand animals are good for therapy for people. But so this week what we've been doing, and we didn't put this out on social media yet. So this week what we've been doing is we have been taking applications, we have been getting them processed, and we have been telling the people who are applying, asking them. So we do not know, you know, we're hoping 2 weeks, maybe three, we don't know that, but it may be that long before you get called. And talking to Debbie and Anna, who've been doing the majority of that this week by email and everything, people are absolutely fine with waiting. And I've always gotten the impression that if you really want something, you know, I'm not saying this should go on for years or months, but if you really want something, you will wait for what you want. And these people have expressed that sentiment to us.
I'm concerned about how much. Well, no, I'm going to take that back. It's a separate conversation for later on. Okay, so I'm going to make a motion that we instruct the shelter staff to return to processing adoptions, including the visitation of up to two animals, visitation for up to two animals, and subsequent pickup.
Is there a second? And I hear a second for the motion that I should like the second. Is there another motion?
Sue, I have a question, and it's actually based off of Laurel's motion and stuff.
So you're saying you're getting about five to six people. Are you getting that every day? I know you're just spacing out those appointments, but did you say that that was every day that you're getting that many people?
No. So what we had done was last week we processed applications Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then called the applicants and said, you know, yes, you can come in and look at an animal at this time. Now that has just changed because obviously we told people that we were going to wait. But so we have had people come in. We don't get five a day applications, I don't think. But we have been seeing, and I guess I'll preference that with saying, well, some days we might get seven, some days we might get three, you know. So across the board, we probably are getting 4 to 5 applications a day.
Right. So I think there's a little difference. Applications you can get, do you have, are those all completed online? They're not completed in person. Is that correct?
Correct. We are either online, by mail, we'll take them on the phone. We're trying to make it as convenient as we can.
Sure. So then do they also determine, just based on your comment, from seeking clarification, online they pick out which animal they would like? Or are they just saying, okay, I want to come in and see a cat, and this is what I determine, which the type that I'd like, and then you are providing, you know, if they don't like that one, they've got two additional they could look at.
So most of the people that have been coming in have chosen a specific animal that they wanted. And we tried to honor that. But as I said, there were very few of those people that came in that when they got in here and actually saw that animal, wanted that one. And so we do have some people that are going to be waiting, coming back. We have their names and everything. We're going to call them as soon as we get. That's the other thing. We are moving cats up to the adoption room as we have cage space, but we, without doing spay and neuters, our supply is going to stop of animals until we can get animals in to do that.
Can you restate that? I didn't quite understand what you were saying.
Well, so we move cats up from our two back rooms, we alternate, to the adoption room.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we just replace the ones that were adopted last week, the 11 that were adopted last week, with ones that were in one of the two back rooms that were ready for adoption. However, we have, right now we have feral cats that we do have a place for, and you know, we will have a place for it, but we have cats that are yet to be spay or neutered, which, you know, is a state law. It says they have to be done within a certain amount of time, but tracking people down has become very difficult. So we send them out spay or neutered, and we have several females that cannot have this surgery until the vets get re-equipped with more equipment. So that's the amount of animals we're moving up will at some point come to a standstill.
I think that'd be great, too. I want to know that we have that many adoptions, that we were out of animals we could offer.
Well, I don't think we're running out. I think we're running out of spay or neutered ones, you know. And again, two vets that we use most often, because prostate do give us very good prices, one will only do neuters, but prefers, you know, probably not to do a lot. I mean, they're all kind of squirreling their surgery supplies away because they're, you know, waiting for client emergencies and so on. But we've always tried to keep, you know, when we worked on our new policy for animal adoptions, we have streamlined it. It is, the animals are being sent out of here quicker. Sometimes we have to do something such as wait for a landlord that doesn't call us back, and we keep calling them and they don't call us back for 4 or 5 days. But that is something that's important. Is that landlord okay with these people having an animal? And sometimes people don't put the information down that we need to contact the landlord, or they don't put the information down of where their animal goes to. So we get those applications, I feel like, processed in a really timely manner. But if this is, I think we're at right now, my feeling on this is it's more about the safety of the, it's not only the employees, but people coming in, handling things, handling animals, gloves not being effective if they're caring, and people are seeing the same animals. There's just a lot of things involved here, and I think that's what brought about my concern.
So, Ms. Marchant, what if we went to just getting some cloth gloves that could be washed daily?
Well, the problem is cloth gloves, as you know, will hold on to, I mean, the rubber gloves, what we can do is we can wear those, and then, you know, we can take them off and throw them away. So last week, that's what I would do. I would give the people that came into the shelter rubber gloves, and they had their own face protection, and then I would put on new rubber gloves for each person coming in, again, trying to keep the transmission down. So cloth gloves, you know, it's always said that material kind of has a tendency to, if it's porous, to, you know, be a problem. That being said, we could try to order some cloth gloves. I know we've tried to order some other things that we've been unsuccessful with, and one of our veterinarians has given us stuff or has stuff for us to pick up. But we could look into cloth gloves, I guess.
It's just a suggestion regardless of how this issue comes out. It just seems like if it's driving you guys kind of crazy or whatever, to, you know, with all the ripping gloves or whatever, I thought maybe that would be an alternate. But anyway, back to the main issue.
So let me, sure, and I appreciate that. I think what really it boils down to is the gloves tear on somebody. They're in the cat or the dog interaction with this cat. The gloves tear, you know, we can go offer them more gloves, but now they've already touched the cat. They've already touched we don't know what in that room. And we go in there after each one and spray it down with our Trigicide, which is, it will kill COVID-19. It's a disinfectant that we've used for 25-plus years. And, you know, but we're not going to hit every nook and cranny. And some people, sadly to say, when they come in, have not accepted the social distancing thing.
We're continuing to discuss this. We had a motion that died for lack of a second. Can I ask if there are any other motions? Okay. I'd like to kind of close this off on this because we've been talking about this for about 45 minutes, and I think we've learned a lot, and particularly, Sue, what I've learned is that you bend over backwards to try to accommodate people who want to adopt cats right now. And, we've deliberated on this, and we don't have another motion. So unless there's...
I do have a question. Yeah, pull it back to Ethan now. So do we need a motion? Right now, we have staff who, I believe, they're back to that coup cod thing versus the board's authority. So, Ethan, are you saying that based upon the coup cod, the staff could do this? So the board does not have to make an affirmative motion to authorize it? Because that's what we're down to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Sue is operating within discretion, and the trust placed in her by the board supervisors. If they disagree with the way she's exercising her authority, they can direct her to do something. Nothing happened. No motion was approved, so
okay,
there's no direction.
So what if we, and I'm just asking here, what if we rescind it so that we, next week or whatever, decide to, what does that be, deactivate the coup cop?
Excuse me.
And I'm asking for in general, for other things that might come up in
the future about the
again,
and making decisions.
I think what we need to do is we need to remember the confidentiality of food costs. I mean, discussions
okay.
that potentially happen in EPMT meeting. Again, we need to think about this. Perhaps have another agenda item to discuss it, but I don't know. I'm not sure on the nature of your question there.
Okay. I'll follow up later after the meeting. Not with that. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on item 7? If not, I'll leave us on to item 8, other items. Is there anything to be brought before the board or other items? If not, we'll move on to item 9, public comment number 1. For the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there any member of the public who wants to address the topic, or Dolores, if you're watching for text messages, have you gotten any text messages?
I have not received any text messages.
Okay, anybody on the phone who wants to make a public comment? If not, I'll close the public comment session and I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
Oh, it's my turn. So moved.
Second.
Okay, Olson?
Aye.
Kevin?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We're adjourned. Thank you very much.